Homo Deus, a brief history of tomorrow. This is page 190. Suppose you were given a choice between the two following vacation packages. Stone Age package. On day one, we will hike for 10 hours in a pristine forest, setting camp for the night in a clearing by a river. On day two, we will canoe down the river for 10 hours, camping on the shores of a small lake. On day three, we will learn from the native people how to fish in the lake and how to find mushrooms in the nearby woods. Modern proletarian package. On day one, we will work for 10 hours in a polluted textile factory, passing the night in a cramped apartment block. On day two, we will work for 10 hours as cashiers in the local department store, going back to sleep in the same apartment block. On day three, we will learn from the native people how to open a bank account and fill out mortgage forms. Which package would you choose? Hence, when we come to evaluate human cooperation networks, it all depends on the yardsticks and viewpoint we adopt. Are we judging pharaonic Egypt in terms of production, nutrition, or perhaps social harmony? Do we focus on the aristocracy, the simple peasants, or the pigs and crocodiles? History is not a single narrative, but thousands of alternative narratives. Whenever we choose to tell one, we are also choosing to silence others. Human cooperative networks usually judge themselves by yardsticks of their own invention, and not surprisingly, they often give themselves high marks. In particular, human networks built in the name of imaginary entities, such as gods, nations, and corporations, normally judge their success from the viewpoint of the imaginary entity. A religion is successful if it follows divine commandments to the letter. A nation is glorious if it promotes the national interest. And a corporation thrives if it makes a lot of money. When examining the history of any human network, it is therefore advisable to stop from time to time and look at things from the perspective of some real entity. How do you know if an entity is real? Very simple. Just ask yourself, can it suffer? When people burn down the temple of Zeus, Zeus does not suffer. When the euro loses its value, the euro does not suffer. When a bank goes bankrupt, the bank does not suffer. When a country suffers a defeat in war, the country does not really suffer, it's just a metaphor. In contrast, when a soldier is wounded in battle, he really does suffer. When a famished peasant has nothing to eat, she suffers. When a cow is separated from her newborn calf, she suffers. This is reality. Of course, suffering might well be caused by our belief in fictions. For example, belief in national and religious myths might cause the outbreak of war, in which millions lose their homes, their limbs, and even their lives. The cause of war is fictional, but the suffering is 100% real. This is exactly why we should strive to distinguish fiction from reality. Fiction isn't bad, it is vital. Without commonly accepted stories about things like money, states or corporations, no complex human society can function. We can't play football unless everyone believes in the same made-up rules, and we cannot enjoy the benefits of markets and courts without similar make-believe stories. But the stories are just tools. They should not become our goals or our yardsticks. When we forget that they are mere fiction, we lose touch with reality. Then we begin entire wars to make a lot of money for the corporation or to protect the national interest. Corporations, money, and nations exist only in our imagination. We invented them to serve us. How come we find ourselves sacrificing our lives in their service? Stories serve as the foundations and pillars of human societies. As history unfolded, stories about gods, nations, and corporations grew so powerful that they began to dominate objective reality. Believing in the great god Sobek, the mandate of heaven, or the Bible enabled people to build Lake Fayum, the Great Wall of China, and Chartres Cathedral. Unfortunately, blind faith in these stories meant that human efforts frequently focused on increasing the glory of fictional entities such as gods and nations, instead of bettering the lives of real, sentient beings. Does this analysis still hold true today? At first sight, it seems that modern society is very different from the kingdoms of ancient Egypt or medieval China. Has not the rise of modern science changed the basic rules of the human game? Wouldn't it be true to say that despite the ongoing importance of traditional myths, modern social systems rely increasingly on objective scientific theories, such as the theory of evolution, which simply did not exist in ancient Egypt or medieval China, We could of course argue that scientific theories are a new kind of myth, and that our belief in science is no different from the ancient Egyptians' belief in the great god Sobek. Yet the comparison does not hold water. Sobek existed only in the collective imagination of his devotees. Praying to Sobek helped cement the Egyptian social system, thereby enabling people to build dams and canals that prevented floods and droughts. Yet the prayers themselves did not raise or lower the Nile's water level by a millimeter. In contrast, scientific theories are not just a way to bind people together. It is often said that God helps those who help themselves. This is a roundabout way of saying that God does not exist, but if our belief in him inspires us to do something ourselves, it helps. Antibiotics and like God help even those who don't help themselves. They cure infections whether you believe in them or not. Consequently, the modern world is very different from the pre-modern world. Egyptian pharaohs and Chinese emperors failed to overcome famine, plague, and war despite millennia of effort. Modern societies managed to do it within a few centuries. Isn't it the fruit of abandoning intersubjective myths in favor of objective scientific knowledge? And can't we expect this process to accelerate in the coming decades? As technology allows us to upgrade humans, overcome old age, and find the key to happiness, so people would care less about fictional gods, nations, and corporations, and focus instead on deciphering the physical and biological reality. In truth, however, things are far more complicated. Modern science certainly changed the rules of the game, but it did not simply replace myths with facts. Myths continue to dominate humankind. Science only makes these myths stronger. Instead of destroying the intersubjective reality, science will enable it to control the objective and subjective realities more completely than ever before. Thanks to computers and bioengineering, the difference between fiction and reality will blur, as people reshape reality to match their pet fictions. The priests of Sobek imagined the existence of divine crocodiles, while Pharaoh dreamt about immortality. In reality, the sacred crocodile was a very ordinary swamp reptile dressed in golden fineries, and Pharaoh was as mortal as the simplest of peasants. After death, his corpse was mummified using preservative balms and scented perfumes, but it was as lifeless as one can get. In contrast, 21st century scientists might be able to really engineer super crocodiles and to provide the human elite with eternal youth here on Earth. Consequently, the rise of science will make at least some myths and religions mightier than ever. To understand why and to face the challenges of the 21st century, we should therefore revisit one of the most nagging questions of all. How does modern science relate to religion? It seems that people have already said a million times everything there is to say about this question. Yet in practice, science and religion are like a husband and wife who, after 500 years of marriage counseling, still don't know each other. He still dreams about Cinderella and she keeps pining for Prince Charming, while they argue about those whose turn it is to take out the rubbish.